Greetings, I'm Tricia Cuffer from sunny Key Largo, Florida, your host for New Books in Architecture, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. If you have any ideas for books, please send me an email at plantspeoplelove@gmail.com. I have a very special guest here for you today, noted architect Wade Weissman, and his book is Heirloom Houses, published by Gibbs & Smith in 2018. Hi, Wade. Welcome to the show.
Well, hello. Thank you very much.
Let's start with tell the audience a little bit about yourself and your educational background.
Okay. Well, I was born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, so I'm a Midwest kid. In the early 1960s. And so I grew up when Milwaukee was sort of a very vibrant industrial city. My father had an art studio, was a commercial artist and worked with a lot of different agencies and local companies. And it was a pretty thriving business economy when I was a little boy. I grew up in that, you know, sort of industrial backdrop city, which, you know, is a very interesting, vibrant place, and ended up falling in love with architecture and old buildings and all kinds of new things that were taking place around us at the time. And I remember they were building the expressway system and changing entire parts of the city. And, some were lost and it was very sad, but then there were other things that, you know, brought some new vibrant sort of, you know, construction to the city. And I fell in love with architecture and decided to study architecture there as an undergrad, did my 4 years, at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, and then, did a year abroad at a small private school in Paris. And then from there went on to graduate school, and I went to the University of Pennsylvania and graduated with my master's in architecture in 1991. And since then, I have been practicing as a residential primary architect. I started my business in the mid 90s, and my business has been lucky to have weathered a few recessions. And so I still find myself in existence now with offices in three different parts of the country: Pittsburgh, my hometown Milwaukee, and Santa Barbara.
Oh wow, you've expanded.
I have, yes, I've expanded my the geography and they sort of came subsequent to clients bringing us to new locations and wanting to build secondary homes or businesses in places that allowed me to be able to sort of expand, flex my muscle a little bit and check out local architecture, build some new relationships, and which led to some new opportunities. So that's kind of how the expansion took place. It was kind of organic.
So what was your motivation for writing this particular book?
Well, I think in many ways it was a way to substantiate what a lot of our clients were asking us to do, which was they were looking for multi-generational buildings that residences that, you know, could serve as a backdrop for, their subsequent generations down the road, wanted to, you know, do something that was, you know, really different in that they were looking for longevity in these buildings, looking for 100-year-plus materials and 100-year-plus, you know, windows and doors, things that you don't really get to do very often because we've, I think most people think in terms of their lifespan and not think about lifespans beyond theirs. And so instead of, you know, them thinking in terms of, well, I just need this for the next 25 years of my life or so, they really thought, you know, look, we're going to build a family compound here. This is going to be around for hundreds of years, we hope. I'm going to set it up in a way that, you know, the generations beyond me can enjoy it. And so we make decisions a little bit different with those clients. And so writing this book was an opportunity to, document these projects that we were working with our clients on, and they were worthy of sharing.
So in your book, who was Steve and how did he help you creatively put this book together?
So Stephen Stolman is the writer of the book. And Stephen has been involved in design for decades, from fashion to architecture to interiors, is very, very fluent in sort of classical languages. And he and I hit it off, became friends, and really kind of was, you know, wonderfully poetic and a beautiful wordsmith, and was sort of a very poetic voice for our work. And so that collaboration led to this book.
So in your intro, I'm going to skip to a different question. You talk about the storytelling aspect of architecture and I guess multi-generational too, that defines your career. How and what do you incorporate story into your design?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, every client has a story and where they came from. They have their own history and their own backdrop. The interesting thing is then they also, you know, have purchased a property, and that property sits in a place that has already a well-documented history about the buildings and the people that settled there. It's interesting to sort of marry the ambition of the client and to the property, and have the property, you know, speak to the architectural precedent that used to be there and or still exists there. And then this new building is going to co-mingle with those existing buildings. And those buildings usually the ones that have lasted because they were durable. And because they continue to delight people. And so that sort of architectural apparatus is what we kind of use as a narrative, let's say, for the people and the activities that we hope are going to take place there and become the future history of that, you know, particular location. And to me, there's something very beautiful about that. These buildings have a tendency to have a quality about them that I really appreciate, and not all of them are architectural or architect designed. You know, some of them were just master craftsmen, and so there's quirkiness, and you know, there was a lack of technology when these buildings were built, and have adapted in many ways, and so. You know, they change and they adapt to their occupants of the time. And what you find are you find these very interesting archetypes that develop locally in these different areas that we're working. And those are the things that kind of excite me. Those are the things I try to discover and share with my client so that they actually can kind of understand, you know, this narrative that we're essentially trying to sort of apply to it. So there really is some storytelling, and then now they're going to tell their story on this property.
Okay, I guess I understand now the title, Heirloom. So heirloom houses being the family story of the house and its integration with the architecture and the environment.
Very much, yes, and it's partially there, and it's partially invented, but it's always influenced and has been shaped by the things that we see around it, and the environment itself.
So, can you tell me maybe one of your favorite projects in this book that tells us a really good story?
They're all different. They're favorites for different reasons. One of my favorite houses is the one that's on the cover, which is a shingle style house on Geneva Lake in Wisconsin. It was designed for a Midwest rooted family, and they are very much sort of urban animals in the city of Chicago, and on the weekends really enjoy retreating as a family and spending time together with their children. And so this really is sort of a beautiful sort of counterpart to the vibrant business life that they lead in the city of Chicago, is this genteel sort of lake house, you know, in Wisconsin.
And so how does your design process for a client like that, how does it work? What kind of mediums and materials do you use that you kind of discuss in the book?
Okay. Well, we start with a pretty aggressive questionnaire, actually, that tries to dig a little bit into, you know, some of the motives for building and buying and purchasing this property and what they're looking to achieve there, and maybe a little bit of insight into how they see the 5 to 10 year window, the 10 to 20 year window, and the 20 year plus window in their crystal ball, if they could essentially look into their own future a little bit. Their hopes and aspirations for how they want to use the house and who they want to, you know, entertain in the house are really kind of important aspects to, you know, what kind of a house we're going to design. If it's a house for gathering, and it's a place to be together, we want to try to help strengthen that by making sure the rooms are laid out properly, and, you know, how the sort of, you know, how the kitchen works into the space. You know, are there a lot of little contemplative spaces where people can sort of separate and have their own privacy, or are they, you know, really set up to reinforce, you know, gathering, you know, game playing activities, things like that. And then we spend a lot of time on the property itself, and we look to see, you know, how the sun is reacting with the property, what kind of views we have, what is the morning light, what is the afternoon light, what is the evening light. We can look a little bit into sort of seeing what the seasonal changes are, and, you know, if these buildings are going to be used in multi-seasons. We look to see the juxtaposition of the neighboring properties and how those will sort of interact with this property, and begin to start coming up with a site strategy, how to start zoning, you know, public, semi-private, and private spaces, and how then can we essentially heighten the experiences of putting the program in certain locations, so that, you know, let's say somebody wants to wake up in the morning and they really want a sunny, you know, breakfast space, you know, in their kitchen. You know, that clearly helps lay out, you know, where we start, you know, putting some of the anchor spaces on our property. And it's fairly simple. I have to tell you, we mostly start with a lot of hand sketches and pencil drawings and sketchbooks, and just coming up with just some, you know, sort of conceptual studies. And those are the ways we sort of primarily start our conceptual design, and then begin the dialogue with the client. And then the building sort of begins to mold itself based on those conversations.
Yeah, I think I see that the cover is of your book is also page 34 and 35, where it has the front of the house, and it has a beautiful drawing evolving into some watercolor and some computer rendering, and then it's pretty because it blends into the photograph too.
Right. Yes, it does. It's sort of the evolution of, you know, sort of concept study and then reality, hopefully, after it's all completed.
So that it all comes together. So I'm kind of curious. You mentioned you studied in Paris, just to get off the track just a little bit. How did that influence your designs? Was studying there influence your designs here in the United States?
Well, you know, materiality and craftsmanship is so timeless. When you, you know, are immersed in a culture that, you know, is has left so many significant, you know, artifacts in their culture. Beauty has endured for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. And essentially, I think what happens is you know, you got a culture that embraces that level of craftsmanship that can actually, you know, withstand that kind of time and age gracefully. And so one of the things that, you know, I noticed when I was there is just this sort of the embellishment and the simplicity of craftsmanship that is so durable. So, you know, you can have a small square with four trees, a light post and a bench. And if all of those things are executed well, you know, can have something that's just incredibly beautiful and enduring. And as a moment in the landscape, it stays, and it's a embrace of a culture that really they're valuing this level of craftsmanship and this artistry that is something we find more enduring over time. They are things that last. And those are the things that I become very, very attracted to, because I wonder how many lives have stumbled upon this moment in space. I wonder, you know, how many people sat and contemplated something on that bench. And sometimes you even find that people will want to leave some sort of record that they were there, and it's either, you know, like you've seen these bridges with all the locks on them, and they have like just thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of locks on these bridges. And so it's just really interesting that, you know, good design and beautiful spaces have a tendency to create a reaction from people. And that's what I think is so enduring.
Well, I guess that type of design, especially for your houses of generations and their planning for generations ahead, makes sense.
Yeah, I'd like to think that, you know, the little children that we're designing playrooms for are eventually going to be hanging your wedding dress on one of those doors, you know, and they're going to start the next chapter in that family's history, you know, in those walls that they've, you know, enjoyed living and sharing with their family members so much. And, you know, there are all these films, I think, that really kind of epitomize that. So like in Fried Green Tomatoes, when, the lead actress passes, you know, they stop the clock and they cover the windows. And, you know, there was these things that were done physically in the residential environment that marked that moment, you know, and it's, you know, living and passing. And great houses, you know, can endure those generational sort of changes. And that's what's really interesting to me. I'm very, very drawn to those kinds of moments where life and our surroundings need to sort of coordinate and they align. And those moments in time are the things that, you know, are sort of etched in your memory.
Do you think that, just kind of off the cuff question, Americans are going for, you know, more houses that are, yeah, have the craftsmanship and the durability instead of just something fast and quick and easy.
Well, I think that there are individuals that are very much in tune with their place in that sort of location, you know, as a citizen, that location that they've chosen to, you know, do something enduring. So I have a client who, his family has had a vacation home on a lake for generations, many generations. You know, obviously as generations expand and, you know, there's multitudes of cousins and, you know, you have expanding families, you know, what ends up happening sometimes is you know, there's just no longer the ability to sort of accommodate everybody, you know, and so somebody will have to establish a new tradition, but maybe across the lake or down the street or something. But yet they see how their family has been a citizen of this particular lake community for those generations, and there's a deep respect. So there is a need to not want to offend or to do something that's grossly overscale, or to make sure that it has a super high level of quality that, you know, is one of those benchmark enduring sort of, you know, citizens itself, where the building actually sort of sits among all the other buildings in a way that, you know, is respectful. And when I have clients that come to me with those kinds of things, typically they're looking for designs that are and an aesthetic that is a little more timeless. And so they are looking sometimes to more historical or classically oriented, you know, architecture types, because they want it to look like it's not something that was just, you know, sort of in your face, too much glass, too reflective, too, you know, they want it to be a little quieter. They want it to live well. They want it to be durable.
Oh yeah, I know what you mean. I've been to Paris, and I know what you mean. The landscapes and the buildings tell the story together.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? You know, you go down the Grand Boulevards, and you know the buildings are somewhat repetitive, but they're all done with such incredible craftsmanship. And, you know, even though the lines are continuous from one building to the other, you see a level of stone carving and of ironwork, and the way the weird street angles hit each other creates these opportunities for these really exuberant sort of ends to the architecture. So you have like these, you know, towers and turrets and, you know, this building, you know, sort of manifests, you know, these focal points. That are usually in these places where the geometry is most complex. And it's really wonderful to sort of see, because you want this continuity, but you also want this ability to stand out.
So in your book too, though, you also cover some contemporary houses. Can you talk about a couple of those clients? What's one of your favorites there?
Well, you get obviously opportunities to do, you know, and in this profession, I love the fact that we get to do, you know, different stylistic, sort of creative, you know, endeavors for different clients. One of the things that we, really enjoy is when we also get an opportunity to work in some high rises, and there's an urban glamour project that is really beautiful. And it's a, for an art collector, and he and his wife wanted an entertainment space. And so they chose a penthouse in a high rise that is a contemporary building. And we essentially were able to essentially, you know, custom build out the interiors. And they wanted it to be modern and fresh, but they also really loved, you know, French Art Deco. And so we were able to sort of influence the interiors with a French sort of Art Deco aesthetic that carried on through to the interior finishes as well, which is really fun.
Well, contemporary could still be timeless and craftsmanship too, because I mean, by the way, for the audience, because I know they can't see your book right here. I mean, it's sure. Beautiful. The photography is beautiful.
Thank you. Well, contemporary architecture, modern architecture, you know, is a fascinating, it's fascinating in that in the hands of really brilliant architects, they come up with a vocabulary that is simple, but incredibly sophisticated in that its divisiveness to be able to show a cleanliness and an ability to, you know, essentially detail the, you know, elements and detail, you know, the utilitarian aspects of the design aesthetics is really magical. And you really, then you get into the discussions about the form, the durability of materials, you know, how those pieces are handled. And there has to be an incredible precision in order to bring that across successfully. You know, these magical windows that disappear at corners and things like that. And it's just exquisite to see that kind of detail. And it has to be absolutely precise. You know, there isn't anything forgiving about it because it's there are only such essential elements that unless they're all done with incredible precision, they don't work. And so that's the beauty of those aesthetics in the design.
Okay, well, you've got lots of design, you've got lots of design styles in here. Well, we go to like English country coastal, and you say in here, and you're right, Steve wrote beautifully in this book. It's really nice. The half-timbered house has been moved around since medieval times, yet it continues to be one of the most beloved residential architectural styles. Can you talk more about your family home with an English accent?
Well, you know, it's interesting because that client bought a magnificent piece of property overlooking Lake Michigan. And that they had lived in, there's in Milwaukee, there are these, you know, sort of Tudor influenced residences, both English and French, that you see, you know, kind of everywhere. And what I love about them is, you know, they're very sort of, they have a traditional sort of shell seemingly from the outside. But what's really interesting about them is that the spaces were usually larger. The embellishments allowed them to be able to gang windows together. And so you would get large expansions of glass and very tall sort of combinations of windows and transoms and you know, windows above that, where you could get these incredible sort of glazed walls that usually would allow the outside and the inside to work very well together. But you're also in a northern environment where you don't have a lot of daylight in the wintertime. And so when you occupy your house, you know, by the evening, you no longer have the light of the outside. What's nice about it is those large expanses of glass are broken up by warm materials, typically like timber, or beamwork or a woodwork of some sort that allows the warmth of the inside to sort of, you know, sort of transect that, you know, big expanse of glass. And so it's very embracing and comfortable to be in. And as a family home, this client had lived in a number of English Tudor influenced design homes before they actually built one. And so for them, that epitomized the idea of a embracing family home, especially on a rural site.
And I guess it kind of goes to like a house of all seasons. You've got a chapter here with, and I love this reflection in the water, the photograph, it reflects the house. So it's kind of reflection of the seasons. So how do you, it says here, maximize potential, that houses rarely end up exactly where they started. What does that mean?
You know, that I think a lot of times, you know, the intent of a house in the very beginning, for, you know, is matched to the client that builds it. And over time, those things change, you know, they get sold, they get bought, someone buys them for a different reason. And what's really interesting to me is inevitably those artifacts are found and loved. And they essentially sort of they endure to what their initial intention was, which was, you know, a style, a attitude towards the design aesthetic and its ability to relate to its surroundings.
Could you give me an example? talk about what's your clients.
So if you look a little bit further into the book, there's a project called Cottage Romantic. And it's a quirky lake house that, you know, sits on the shores of Lake Michigan in the Door County Peninsula of Wisconsin. And when my clients bought it, it was built probably in the early 1900s. It had transformed and turned into a rooming house, you know, back in the 50s and 60s. And, you know, its interesting, quirky attitude as a lake home, had been muddled up completely. And then you sort of layer on, you know, the fact that this probably didn't have a lot of technology or a lot of, you know, advanced wiring or electrical work or stuff. And then, you know, over the years, people just kind of, you know, superimpose conduit over walls and things like that. And, you know, this was probably a seasonal house and then it became a year-round house. And so the example that I'm trying to bring up is then all of a sudden somebody finds it, which is this diamond in the rough, and brings, you know, the architect to it and says, do you think we should tear it down or do you think we should keep it? And at that moment, you know, it's my opinion, but my opinion is this is so interesting and so quirky that if we get rid of all the junk that's muddled it up and covered it up and, you know, hidden half the windows and taken away half of the elements, we can undo and restore something that will be enduring and beautiful for another lifetime. And essentially that was our project, was to, you know, understand and recognize the weird, quirky, strange things that were going on in the house, get rid of all the junk that, you know, helps cloud it, and then bring it back to, you know, something that is loved all over again. And so that's sort of it's an interesting sort of essay on the history of a building, but it found its rightful owner who came in and saw it for what it was, and valued it enough to restore it rather than replace it.
Well, that kind of goes to the next one. I like this, the charm of the farm, the American farmhouse. That's true. It's a classic in a way for our country because we don't have a lot of history like Europe. But it's been an integral part of a seemingly endless architectural conversation. What is that conversation you can have with a farmhouse?
Well, so it's interesting. You know, I think, you know, the farmhouse, there, you know, this whole aesthetic of the modern farmhouse, you know, as you know, obviously become, you know, a sort of mega trend in design, especially in residential over the last, you know, 5-6 years, let's say. I think there's something incredibly romantic about this, you know, this residence that sort of sat as the sort of headquarters of a agricultural, you know, enterprise. Where all of the people in it were a part of this enterprise. And so the idea of sustaining yourself, you know, in the land, sustaining and growing vegetables and meat and, you know, animals and livestock and poultry and, you know, all the things that, you know, sort of, you know, make up the sort of makeup of a farm, is really kind of a, it's one of those true American, you know, I shouldn't say American. It's one of those true lifestyles that has transcended for, you know, centuries and centuries and centuries and centuries. Right. So, you know, people living and working the land and sustaining themselves a living and having enough to be able to take to market. And so they could, you know, sort of, you know, sell and trade. And that family home, that enterprise home, was a lot about utility. It was a lot about, you know, being able to, you know, go out and, you know, pick the harvest and can, and you had a lot of really interesting architectural spaces like summer kitchens and places like that, where, you know, they were really set up for utility, for the idea of being able to, you know, harvest all this sort of offerings from the land, can it and sustain it so that you had it for the cold months and for the months when the farm wasn't producing as much. And so the boldness of these utility spaces in a farmhouse, like these big working kitchens where there was a table right in the middle, and everybody sat around and you talked about what the tasks were for the day while you were having your morning sustenance and your morning coffee about, you know, this horse needs shoes and this wagon wheel needs fixing and this, you know, 40 acres needs to be tilled. There's something really romantic and wonderful about the idea of a house being, you know, essentially the headquarters of an enterprise. And I love that juxtaposition. I mean, it's really interesting because it's an unusual archetype.
Can you talk about a favorite farmhouse that you've designed?
Well, I have one that is not in this book that I'm just finishing, and it's on a biodynamic farm. And it is a Spanish colonial farmhouse that sits in Southern California. It's a very interesting environment to work in. That will be in the next volume of hopefully heirloom houses too. A house in here called the House on the Prairie, and it's inspired by, you know, sort of a prairie farmhouse, where it has multiple sort of looks like buildings that, you know, make up this little residential sort of compound. So there's a pair of garages. The house itself is not a very big house. It's very open. It's based on having an open hearth, one large, really big space, and then it has some refuge spaces. But the home itself is a very simple floor plan, and it's got an aesthetic inside of it that I think is a little more up to date, little bit more sort of transitional, in that it doesn't speak to or just embrace historic archetypes. It is actually something that is looking to be a little bit more open. It's got a much larger, sort of more open floor plan. The clients love light, so everything about this house is about the light and its exposure.
I'm making you flip all different pages of the book, aren't I?
Yeah, that's okay. So that's perfectly fine. I'm an opportunity for me to, you know, take a look at the book all over again.
It's a fresh look. So yeah, well, can heirloom houses, can they be contemporary too? I mean, or it looks very up to date on the inside.
Yes. And the answer is absolutely. You know, I think anything that is done, whether it's sort of, you know, clean and contemporary, or has a lot of sort of historic precedent, you know, can be an heirloom house, because it's about the feeling you get in a space. And there's an embrace that speaks to you as home speaks to you. And it's, you know, a place where, you know, we seek refuge. It's a place where we seek, you know, sustenance. It's a place where, you know, we gather. It's a place where we mourn. It's a place where we celebrate. You know, home is many things and has to serve multiple functions for, you know, its occupant. But at the end of the day, it's how you feel about that space, how those spaces make you feel. And that's the interaction of the landscape and the building itself and how those tie together.
Okay. Well, I'll confess my master's degree is actually in the landscape architecture. So I like your landscapes.
Thank you.
So on that, Garden Folly and estate renovations, what do you do around the outside of your houses too? How do you bring the outside inside out? How do you incorporate that into your design? So I guess it depends on the weather too.
Well, it depends on the weather, the location, the view, the orientation. You know, sometimes you have spectacular sights. You know, we do a lot of lake residences, let's say, and, you know, but lake, you know, obviously lake shores have all different orientation. And so, you know, there are some lots that are somewhat challenging because they have north facing views. So you really, really want to make sure that, you know, all these rooms are oriented towards that view. But it's also, unfortunately, the side of the house that gets the least amount of direct sunlight. And so one of the challenges that you have with sites such as that is, you know, being able to sort of lay out the program of the house, maximize the view, but also be able to create enough transparency to the warm side of the house or the south-facing sides of the house so that you get those deeper penetrations of sunlight. And that helps activate a space and warms it up and gives it that glow and becomes in spaces a space that you really want to be in. And so that also then also speaks to how you say, like, lay out your exterior spaces as well. So, you know, do you want to walk outside and, you know, maybe in a very warm climate, like in Tennessee, you know, it's great to have north facing shaded views because you don't have the heat of the sun, you know, making it unbearable. But in places like Wisconsin, where you really want the warmth of the sun to come in, you know, that can pose a challenge. And so, you know, the way we lay out our landscapes is we, first of all, try to inform them by the how we essentially lay out the interior rooms and what are their counterparts to the outside. And then how do those essentially, how can we continue to, you know, enhance those views? So, like, one of the things that we might do is use the grade, for instance. So you may walk out at grade, but then step down 4 or 5 steps so that the furniture doesn't become something you're looking through if you're looking at a lake view, let's say, you know, and so that furniture then can be sunken essentially out so that the vista, the grand vista, isn't clouded by a bunch of stuff, you know, and that you can really see out. And I think if we can essentially capture, you know, some pleasant microclimates outside where a porch stoop might be, or a sunny spot where a screen porch could essentially be, that also essentially helps us then create the moves that we can collaborate with a landscape architect on how to lay out the outdoor spaces. You know, there's views and fire rings and screen porches and stoops. You know, we have this ability to create, you know, gardens, and we have vista points, and we have places where you can just cozy up and read a book. So, you know, I think laying out, you know, the building and the siting of it is really, really important. Probably the most important thing that, you know, we can sort of start with outside of aesthetics, outside of any of those things. I think the diagram of how the site and spaces inside and outside work together.
So I know it's kind of hard, like, picking your favorite child, but is there another project in this book that stands out to you with story? And it was a great client to work with, that, like, you know, a collaboration, because your interiors are just stunning too. The interior designs are beautiful. Can you, a project that really where, like, everything comes together, like, you know, magic. Do you know what I mean?
Sure. Well, I think we're fortunate in that a lot of our clients, you know, do see that potential. And those are the things that we begin to sort of explore together. I think there's a number of projects that I think, you know, work very well. I think from my perspective, I think that the new fashion farmhouse was one of those projects. There's a project that we did called Contemporary Folk. And that is another sort of house that I think it really, really works well together. The layout, the aesthetic, and how it works with the outside. You know, the yard spaces, the courtyards, And I think that both of those projects have some moments in there that just really, really came together well. They overcame challenges, or they embraced something unique about the client. So in the contemporary folk house, that originally was designed for my brother. And so, the fact that, I was able to essentially do something with my own family and come up with a design that I thought, really hit the mark in its simplicity, beauty, but also in its ability to sort of create some drama and warmth, was something that I really was excited about. Lots of beautiful light. The way it laid out on the landscape was really well executed. The contractor did a great job. Material palettes was very clean and fresh. But that's a project that I'm quite proud of. And then the new fashion farmhouse, I thought was an incredible project because the client really loved very sophisticated, tailored sort of details. And in this particular home, they weren't looking for huge spaces. They had four children. They were looking for a great family home that lived well. I think that the spaces ended up, being very rich, beautifully tailored, well executed, but not grossly overscaled. And I think that that's always a challenge because, sometimes when people are willing to put a lot of resources, into a project, sometimes the scale can get out of hand. Where you walk into rooms and all the furniture is an island because, there's stuff on every single wall. In this particular case, it was really nice to be able to have, the ability to build in furniture, build in big comfortable bench seats in bay windows, not so far from the fireplace that you can't feel the warmth of it. And so there were some nice things that took place scale-wise in that residence. And those are some of the things that I truly appreciate. And those are some of those qualities that you find in these anonymous homes that are well-respected and enduring, that they aren't so grossly overscaled that they, they're not consistent with the neighborhood or the fabric.
Oh, that sounds, yeah. How was your brother for a client? Was he a good client?
Family members can be challenging.
but it was a lot of fun.
But at the same time, it's really beautiful to be able to, one of the things that, they're like you said, you don't have a favorite, project, they're kind of all your favorites. And there's a part of you in all of them. But most of them, you when they're done, you really don't have a whole lot of, involvement in those, in the history of what's going to take place in those homes. And doing something for a family member is really different because then all of a sudden, there's a benchmark gathering or a holiday or something like that, that you're a part of. And so, for me, it was one of those things where, I was very aware of the things that, I thought would be, enhancements, furnishing wise for my brother's house. And so every time there was a holiday or something like that, I would end up, hitting all the antique stores and just bringing a gross amount of stuff to the prop for the project. There's a really great house that is not in this book because we didn't do the whole house. We only did the kitchen, and it was actually for my other sibling, which is my sister. And I was there for the holidays this last December, and it was really magical to be there for the holidays and to have the work that you do all of a sudden be now come part of the history of your life, which is really fun.
So I guess heirloom houses is just really, it's just about family.
It is. In many ways, it really is. Yeah.
Well, Wade, I know we've taken up a lot of your time today, and I thank you for being here. And this is a stunningly beautiful book. Since the audience can't see it, I just have to tell them about it, describe it. the drawings and the photography all come together. So I always give everybody an opportunity. Can you tell the audience, what are you working on now?
Well, I am working on a couple of really interesting projects. One of them is a large hospitality project in Nashville. We're sort of expanding into even more extraordinary, bigger homes, which is, you know, sort of the next level, which is hotel. We're looking at doing a couple of small boutique inns on a couple of wineries on the Central California coast. We've been finishing touches on a Spanish colonial farmhouse on a biodynamic farm outside of Los Angeles. Working on a new lake compound on a gorgeous piece of property in northern Wisconsin for a multi-generational sort of resident who is now venturing into building their own lake house instead of using the family lake house because of, you know, the inability to sort of have direct access to it on a normal basis. And so they have another piece of property on the same lake and are now looking to establish a new tradition for their family, which is kind of interesting. So some really interesting projects. We're working on a small boutique subdivision outside of Pittsburgh. We are working on another one outside of Milwaukee, where we're doing a number of the buildings there and some of the urban design or sort of new urbanist design ideas that we're incorporating into the master planning. So some really interesting projects, you know, not just one trophy house after another, but some more modest, endeavors as well.
Oh, that sounds fascinating. Thank you for being here today. And I'll tell our audience, this is Heirloom Houses, The Architecture of Wade Weissman, published by Gibbs & Smith in 2018. And this has been Tricia Kaffer from sunny Key Largo, Florida, your host for New Books in Architecture, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. If you have any ideas for books, please send me an email at plantspeoplelove@gmail.com. And thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, Tricia. I really appreciate you taking the time to get to know my book a little better.